Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
What's up, everybody? How you doing? I'm Ben Bateman, your host of Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network devoted to bringing you all content movie-related. I am joined today by my co-host, Andrew Guy.
I'm back, and my shirt's mostly waterproof.
And our special guest today, Razzle.
What's up? How's everybody doing?
Yeah, so thanks for coming, Razzle.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Razzle's a stand-up comic. He has a couple podcasts out there, Nerdist and Wolf Pop, so he should have some entertaining and funny things to say on the movie for us today.
And I just love action movies. Huge fan of action movies.
You have to if you're going to be in this room with us.
That's right.
I'm on board. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. So, today, guys, episode 3 of Action Movie Anatomy covers a classic from 1994 called Speed. Or, in other words, the bus that wouldn't slow down.
That couldn't slow down.
So here on the show, we qualify movies, the most classic of action movies, in four categories. They were released after 1981. The hero is always the smartest guy in the room, along with the villain. There's at least one explosion. The hero always plays by their own rules, and the hero also is a police, military, or political figure. As with most cases, this one qualifies. So we're going to get right into it. We want to show you guys the trailer first, because the trailer is awesome. So let's take a look.
Pop quiz. Airport. Gunman with one hostage. He's using her for cover.
That's a great 90s trailer.
You're 100 feet away.
I wonder if people will like this trailer as much as we do.
Shoot the hostage.
People didn't like the Edge of Tomorrow trailer as much as we did.
No.
People are stupid.
No, they're not.
We love them for watching us.
Edge of Tomorrow is a great movie.
Oh, they love the movie. They just didn't like the trailer. Which kind of blew me away.
Bomb's already taken out cable. Bomber wants $3 million or he blows the emergency
brakes. My favorite line.
Anything else that'll keep this elevator from falling?
Yeah.
The basement.
I like
it. They can strike anywhere. At any time.
Please sign in.
The guy who did those 90s...
There were two of them. Yeah. Like the two.
This one, I think this guy's dead though, right?
Yeah, and he was the guy.
He was the guy.
Uh-huh.
For LA cops, so are people watching this and hearing us?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Really cool.
There's a movie, like a comedic movie about his daughter called it.
In a World.
Oh. It's actually really good. Yeah. It talks a lot about voiceover and business and all that. So good.
Hopper. Hopper's classic.
Oh, so good in this.
He's like a certain point of crazy, like past his prime, but like insane in a kind of a campy way.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Well, and like the voiceover guy, like I'm listening to it, and it's not even like it's like an action voiceover. He's like doing like a scream voiceover. Like there's don't turn the corner.
Right. It's the same voice for every
trailer.
Did
you lock your doors?
Well, they also...
Someone is in your refrigerator.
Yeah. They also had no idea that this movie was going to be a hit. So, like, everything about the way that it's sold and all of it...
The budget was so low.
I know. We were shocked when we looked at the budget.
Blew my mind when I found out how low it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an independent movie right now. That's like a Cannes movie. Like,
Oh,
you only paid $30 million to make this movie?
Right. Then it was just a massive,
it's
massive
going straight
success,
to VOD. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Gosh, this trailer's so good.
It's a really good one.
It's just a classic 90s trailer.
And the opening line, you know, of this trailer is just amazing. Like,
yeah.
It was so good.
It's really, like, to me, it's like an amazing reminder of how effective a scenario can be. Like, just the scenario of this movie is what makes it as good as it is.
Yeah, and I mean, unfortunately, it's showing all the really cool parts, too, but...
But it doesn't
still
ruin it.
Yeah.
It's also like, funny how campy... Like, if The Simpsons was spoofing this.
Yeah.
Like, how many things about this are, like, easy to spoof?
Hold on. Oh, yeah. This part. Love it. I love that part. Very
well,
end of the trailer.
Like, it shows them the bus jumping through the air, and you're like, does it land?
Yeah.
What happens next?
Coming
I want to pay $3 Boom. In 1994 money to see this.
Right? Yeah. 100%. So, that's a sweet trailer. At least we think so. And we're going to start with this one with profiles. Star breakdown. So, we want to look at where Keanu Reeves... and Dennis Hopper, because at this point Bullock was kind of an unknown. So we give her an honorable mention here, but we want to start with, you know, Hopper and Reeves, where they were in their careers. So I'm gonna go through this. Keanu Reeves' sort of three most recent hits that would have maybe related to the same audience were Point Break in 1991, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, also 91, and Dracula in 92. And this is 94. So he had a few other movies in there, but as far as like this, maybe the same male audience probably would have seen those other movies.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's literally at the pinnacle, or like the beginning of the pinnacle of his career. Like he goes, I mean, because 5 years later he's in The Matrix.
Right.
He seems like a totally different person.
Right.
But he's been grinding since the mid-80s. He does a few movies every single year.
He was in Youngblood with Rob Lowe.
I mean, the only way this movie could have made even more money is if Dennis Hopper's character name was Bodie.
Right.
And Keanu was actually Johnny Utah, just a new cop in a new city saving a bomb on a bus.
Do you know what I find fascinating is actually that this movie came out in 94, and Point Break, which for the record is my all-time favorite movie, is 3 years prior. Like, it took him 3 years to give Keanu another action vehicle. And Point Break was hugely successful.
Mm-hmm. That was because there are no dead president masks in Speed.
Yeah,
right. It would have came out 2 years prior if everybody on the bus was wearing a mask.
So what's mind-blowing is that because Point Break was a success, but it wasn't, I don't think they attributed the success to Keanu. They attributed it to Swayze.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
why this movie, it was not supposed to be as big as it was. It came out in June. We'll get to that later when we talk about box office stuff.
Yeah.
But
well, the interesting about that is that Paramount didn't want anything to do with it because they were like, Keanu just can't carry a movie. He's not enough star power to get this thing going. And that's why Fox ended up picking up later on. But yeah, you're right. Keanu did not have, his name was not that powerful yet.
Yeah, so he's like front end of the action star Keanu that we eventually, you know, came to know and love. I mean, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey obviously was a sequel, so that did pretty well. Dracula is the same, like, that kind of witless Keanu character that shows up in, like, The Devil's Advocate.
Yeah.
And, like, you know the one where he's, like, kind of a good-to-do nice guy who's just kind of, like, airheaded? That's, like, sort of the same character that he plays in Dracula?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of plays that in this movie, too. He's just, like, the nice cop. Like, oh, ma'am. And he's calling everybody. Yeah. He's like, I just want to save everybody on the bus.
So, Drew and I talked about this the other day. Like, one of the rules is that you have to be the smartest guy in the room, right? That's, like, one of the rules. But it's funny because we were saying, like, he's, like, accidentally the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, like, he is the smartest guy in the room, but he's, like, screwing up the whole time he's doing it. And it just works out. He's like, oh, yeah, perfect.
But he's only the smartest guy on the bus. Like, if you put him in the room with anybody else, he's not.
Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels proves the point that he's the smartest guy. And then, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the movie, he's not at the end of the movie.
Well, the thing is, also, you see with some of these movies is that, like, if you do have one of those heroes that's maybe lacking some quality, there's often the balance guy. So, like, in The Rock, Nick Cage is the smartest guy, but he doesn't have, like, the badassness that, you know, Sean Connery has. So they kind of pair together. It's the same with Jeff Daniels and Connery in this movie. Yep. They're kind of both halves.
They create the ultimate hero.
I mean, and half of the problem would have been, I mean, if Keanu was just smart and he got on the bus, he would have just been like, dudes, I'm a cop. There's a bomb on the bus. That's why I tried so hard to get on this bus.
Right.
Don't shoot the driver.
Right.
Would have been that easy. I'm not here for anybody. There's just a bomb on the bus.
Instead,
I don't care about your crime.
Yeah. Like this, just, you jumped on the bus. You tried so hard to get on the bus. Just tell everybody, don't try and keep secrets. Just be like, look, here's the deal. Stay calm.
But then that would have defeated all the tensions. So, that's Keanu. Then you look over to Dennis Hopper.
Yeah.
Now, Hopper did like seven movies in 1993. Like, but none of them really were huge blockbusters. He was just working and grinding. So the ones we listed, they were all 93 movies. You have True Romance, Red Rock West, and Super Mario. And you'd think like, oh, if anybody else had those movies listed in 93, those are all, you know, fairly visible movies.
Yeah. Sure.
There's seven others that we just had never heard of.
Right.
Okay.
So that's pretty wild. But I mean, True Romance, Red Rock West, and Super Mario, that's like a pretty visible project.
Yeah.
And these guys were in a movie together 8 years ago as well, Keanu and Hopper.
Yeah, The River's Edge.
River's Edge.
Oh,
yeah.
I've heard of it.
With Crispin Glover.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I love
everyone's
that.
Everyone's favorite guy to work with in Hollywood.
Yeah. That movie is actually like really sweet. Like, very entertaining.
I heard you told me I was missing out on it.
Hopper's like really weird, and Crispin Glover, like, so Hopper's name is Feck, F E C K, and Crispin Glover's like Feck.
What's his name?
Crispin Glover? I don't remember. I haven't seen the movie in a long time.
Feck.
Have you ever seen Willard?
Yes.
Breeds the rats.
The rat tamer, essentially.
So weird. What an odd dude.
Yeah.
Odd, but he's awesome.
Sure. So, Super Mario Brothers.
Sure.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. That's great.
It kind of reminds me of like when De Niro was in The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. It's kind of like a similar casting.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you see these guys, you're like, wait, what are you doing in this movie right now?
Yeah. It's just kind of like, what? Like, how did this... I mean, I guess it got greenlit because Nintendo was like the biggest...
Oh, it was blowing up. Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. If somebody came up to you and said, hey, you can turn into a dinosaur at the end of the movie, you would do the movie.
In right. a heartbeat.
I would do... I don't care how bad the movie is. If I get to transform into a dinosaur... I'm going to do that movie.
And Hopper was just in.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's just a huge fan of dinosaurs. That's like, why he did the movie.
He's like, look, guys, I made Easy Rider, okay? Money in the bank.
Right. Two things I like. Motorcycles and dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly.
And bombs on buses that can't stop. On board.
So True Romance is like a classic. But what's amazing about that, so Drew and I, once again, have like conferred for the longest time about this. Yeah. We have this notion that the perfect action category is defined by Tony Scott, that he's the guy. Like, there's like some tonality to his movies that is the most, it's even more than Michael Bay. Like, it's just the guy. And True Romance, though, is the weird movie because it doesn't feel like a Tony Scott movie at all.
Yeah. I was actually really surprised when I saw that Tony Scott directed that.
Because Tarantino wrote and sold him the script. And then they flipped the script a whole bunch around. So True Romance is kind of a dramatic classic from the 90s in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
In a way that a lot of these other movies we talk about are not really dramatic classics. They're just classics.
What is it? Val Kilmer, he plays that. He's Elvis for like a minute, right?
Yeah. Kilmer plays Kilmer. And Oldman's in it. He plays Drexel.
Yeah.
And like Gandolfini, Hopper's in it.
Yeah, it's got a lot of people. Yeah.
It's a rockin' cast.
Yeah. And then the other one that we referenced here was Red Rock West, which is clearly a reach for a visible movie that Hopper had done. But, you know, Nick Cage is in it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it since I was a little kid, but I remember, you know, enjoying it to some degree.
Yeah, I think I watched, like, the decade, 15 years ago. Don't remember any of it.
Yeah. So, anyway, Hopper, he was definitely transitioning into that part of his career where he was kind of, I can do what I want, work when I want. I don't really recall anything after Speed that really jumps out at me as, like, a big, huge success that he was in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were movies here and there, but this was, for me, just the time I grew up and the type of movies that I loved growing up. This is kind of how I remember Dennis Hopper very well. This and Easy Rider, you know?
Yeah. So the last bit we wanted to mention was that Sandra Bullock, her honorable mention was that she also did Demolition Man in 1993.
She almost had nothing else to talk about.
Yeah,
to this point.
Prior to 90, like, she's... That's the amazing thing about this, is another case where you say that the studio was not prepared for this movie to be as big as it was. They put it in the hands of Sandra Bullock because she was not somebody... She was not over-sexualized yet.
Yeah.
She wasn't overexposed. She didn't have a lot of personalities and actors that people were aware of. So, I mean, when we get to recasting later, obviously, we can sort of compare.
Well, originally, they also originally wanted... They were going to have it... It was going to be more of like a comedy, like an action comedy. They were going to have Ellen DeGeneres was actually...
Right.
Mm-hmm. She was up for Sandra Bullock's part.
Yeah, well, I think the full cast of that was...
It was Jeff Bridges for Keanu.
Right.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
And I believe the last one was...
One of the Baldwin brothers was up for it, too. Then he turned it down.
Oh, yeah. There was a whole list of A-listers that were supposed to be...
Stephen Baldwin's not an A-lister. Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about Johnny Depp was off of the role. Yeah. Brad Pitt.
Right.
George Clooney.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then in the 90s, that's funny that one of the Baldwins would have been like...
Yeah, but here's the problem, too, with that, is they turned it down and they rewrote it. Like, they had them all rewrite it. I don't know if it's... I can't remember what's on here. I don't know if that's to talk about. But they're... like, Keanu and all them, they had people... Like, it was... They didn't like it, and they had it rewritten a lot because it was too much like Die Hard.
Right, yeah.
Which is kind of puzzling because Die Hard's one of the best action movies of all time, so just...
Yeah.
Die Hard on a bus? Yes, please.
Well, actually, that leads us right into the next section because we're about to start talking about production development. Really quickly.
Ed Harris was the Dennis Hopper replacement.
Oh, yeah.
Let him for one second.
That was awesome. That was if when it was taking place in space, though.
Right.
Because that's all Ed Harris does is movies where he's in space.
Well, except that he's in the most classic action movie of all time.
The Rock.
As General Hummel, which is the greatest. But so we're going to get into production development, just kind of how the movie got made. Before we do, Andrew has something he'd like to share with you about iTunes and subscribing.
If you could please subscribe to iTunes and give us a rating, you know, give us a shout out, and we'll be happy to shout you out on air. Yeah, that's my Keanu asking to do iTunes.
Thank you, Drew. Yeah, as always, you know, find us on Twitter, comment, et cetera, et cetera. Interact with us. It'd be awesome. We'd love to talk to you guys and hear what you think. So you mentioned that the movie was going to have other people, that it had gone through various rewrites. So let's kind of get into how it got made. It's written by Graham Yost, who at the time was not exactly he wasn't a home run hitter, so to speak. He ended up, you know, writing this movie. He wrote Broken Arrow. He wrote Mission to Mars. He really ended up in much more of a production role later on down the line. He's produced a bunch of huge TV shows, Justified, The Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of wasn't again, it's like one of these, this was an accidental movie because they spent $30 million on it, right? So the $30 million movie, when you compare it to the movies that it's sort of now in retrospect compared against, Die Hard and these
nothing.
Movies. Yeah, it wasn't, nobody expected this was going to blow up. So you have kind of a, and then most interestingly to me is that it's directed by Jan de Bont, right? Now, he was a cinematographer for like 30 years.
A much more successful cinematographer than he ever was a director.
I mean, massive, massive. Like he worked with Paul Verhoeven, right? Verhoeven's like very, very famous for doing kind of these self-satirical takes on genres that are... So, you know, Starship Troopers, right?
Yeah, RoboCop.
RoboCop, yeah. It's like poking fun at his own genre. Showgirls is like the ultimate example of this, where he's like, I'm going to, you know, strippers and the whole... And it's just going to be funny. But he was a director who was very famous in the 70s and the 80s, and Jan de Bont was his cinematographer for almost every movie he ever did.
Hmm.
And this took him all the way through Basic Instinct. He did the cinematography for The Hunt for Red October. I mean, all kinds of stuff. Lethal Weapon 3, All the Right Moves, starring Tom Cruise, the football movie.
Of course.
But he just had to talk about Tom Cruise. Yeah, you couldn't do one episode.
I love Tom Cruise. This is his directorial debut, though. They gave him speed because he had this idea and he thought, you know, I guess they were like, well, this guy's made movies for 30 years. He's been behind the camera.
Yeah.
And this was his most successful movie.
Yeah. After that, it just kind of goes downhill. He only directs, like, what, 6 more movies or something like that?
I think 5 total his whole career.
Yeah.
It's like this, and then he does Twister.
Okay. And this is a really good movie.
Twister's pretty sweet.
I mean,
it's enjoyable.
Billy Paxton. I'll watch Bill Paxton do anything.
I love Bill Paxton.
Is it Paxton? Yeah, it's Paxton. It's Paxton. Yeah. And then he does Speed 2.
Okay.
And then he does Mission to Mars, is that right?
Is it Hard Rain?
No, that's one of the producers.
Oh, okay, right.
He does The Haunting remake in 1999, that's what it is.
Right.
And then finally he did Lara Croft Tomb Raider 2, the Cradle of Life.
One of best movies ever made. That was when they were like, all right, dude, you're done. Sorry, no more.
Kind of fell off the cliff at that point.
He's a fan of Cradles.
He didn't really work again as a director.
Fan of Lives and Cradles.
Yeah, it's interesting about the writing of this is that, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, Paramount originally had this movie. They wanted to take it, and they were like, no, we're not going to do it. We don't want Keanu, and we don't like the script. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this guy, Joss Whedon. Does that ring a bell with anyone?
Yeah.
He has actually
What's
been...
What's he
done? Just go ahead and IMDb him when we're done. IMDb. You might recognize a few of the movies.
Okay.
He actually was credited for writing most of the dialogue of this movie. And at that point, once the dialogue was rewritten, that's when Keanu signed on. Because he thought that the movie sounded too much like Die Hard, originally.
Just dropped a pen,
Joss Whedon. He's the guy who allegedly stole the plot and story for Cabin in the Woods.
Right.
Yeah. Joss Whedon.
That obscure writer. That guy has, like, really immersed himself.
He's going nowhere.
It's amazing how much he's done. If you think about This is 94, and Buffy was back then, you know, the movie, the show, the comic book following
that. Well, was it Joss or JJ? One of the two was, like, pretty much wrote the story for Toy Story 1 also, I believe.
Oh.
Or wrote, it was pickup art, like punch-ups, jokes, or something like that. One of those two, like you think of them now, they're all huge now, but
yeah.
I mean, you really look back and it's like
they're just
grinding since they were kids almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if I had to guess, I would guess it was Joss Whedon.
It probably
Abrams feels more, he's more action oriented.
Yeah. More action sci-fi.
Yeah, and Joss has got like a very, very
But it's amazing. Like you forget how long they've been in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so as we talked about, you know, this movie didn't get made. It didn't get made with the idea that Keanu was going to be a superstar, an action superstar, right? Like I said, Point Break was sort of driven by Swayze. So when they did make it, this production team who was on it, there's a guy named Ian Bryce. Now he's the executive producer of this movie. His first notable credit was that he was a production assistant on Return of the Jedi.
Oh yes.
He was then tasked with doing the 1985 TV movie Ewoks: The Battle for Endor. Which, by the way, guys, the whole movie is streaming on YouTube. You could find it.
I love it.
This is like what Star Wars was at its like most commercial mid-80s stretch, and they were just pumping out everything they could.
I think the best part about it is that it starred Wilford Brimley, who has diabetes.
Wilford Brimley and Warwick Davis.
Leprechaun.
Yeah. Warwick Davis is from Willow, mind you.
Yeah.
Willow!
I cannot wait to watch that movie.
Yeah,
it's good. I remember it.
Yeah. Oh, you've seen it?
Oh, yeah.
The Ewok movie?
Oh, of course.
Battle for Endor. Okay.
Huge Star Wars fan.
So he also, you know, that he worked on Batman Returns as a producer, Howard the Duck, Beverly Hillbillies. But really following Speed, he kind of skyrocketed into, like, the stratosphere. You know, Saving Private Ryan, Almost Famous, all the Transformers movies, World War Z. Definitely kind of a who's who of Michael Bay related movies in the last 10 years, especially.
Michael Bay, huge fan.
But he worked with two other producers, Mark Gordon and Alison Leone, and they were actually...
They all worked on Saving Private Ryan together.
Yeah, so the first half of their all like sort of careers as producers, they were all kind of related. But after the Bay separation by Ian Bryce, we'll say, he starts to work on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all the Transformers movies, okay. Pain and Gain, The Island, they sort of stopped working together as much. But
And then Gordon kind of went on to be like the Roland Emmerich guy for a little bit, right?
Yeah, she worked on, you know, Day After Tomorrow and Shark Tale and another, I think, 2012 as well. So, anyways, that's the sort of the production team behind it. I do think with Jan de Bont, it's really interesting that a first-time director was able to get the tone of this movie. It doesn't feel like this movie doesn't feel like it's just a visual movie. And you would expect a guy that was behind the camera for so long and was in charge of shooting it to maybe be a little bit more cinematic, like everything, that's what you're paying attention to. And there are some moments, of course.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, there are some moments. But, I mean, this movie is driven by the circumstances more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
The movie in general is so, like, once you get invested, you're on board, like, the whole movie.
Right.
Like, you're not second-guessing anything. You know, there's the bomb on the bus, you know this.
Right.
You know they can't slow down, and you've been in traffic before.
Right,
right, right.
Like, that's all you need to know, and it's such... I mean, he nails it perfectly. Like, it's...
Yeah.
You know,
it's such a great... Like, he nails everything. I mean, it's... There's not a ton of humor. There's not... I mean, it's... There's a little bit, but it's like... It's more like cutting through how stressful this situation would be.
Right. And you just said, so you've got me on board. There's a bomb on the bus. And this brings up an interesting topic that you and I had a discussion about, which is the first 15 minutes of this movie relevant at all?
Yeah, so it's the whole action movie pretense thing, right? Like, this is the thing that 90s movies did in a big way. And nowadays, when you look at a movie like Taken that's trying to capitalize on the old genre, you have to do this thing where you establish the characters. You put them in an initial situation. The Rock does it, obviously.
Yeah, the Expendables.
Yeah, and it's about 12 minutes of exposition that's like, this is where this guy lives. This is one quality that's going to come back later that you're going to know about him. This is his wife. You know what I mean? This is what he grew up doing.
Yeah.
Right? He's obsessive compulsive. He locks his doors or something. And then that ends up playing in the movie. You have to ask yourself, this movie, when the bus blows up and the phone rings, you're kind of, at that moment, you're kind of like, I'm on board. This is great. You're like, I'm going to watch this. Couldn't you have just started the movie there?
No. And I'll tell you why. There was so much dialogue prior to, in the elevator and, setting up Dennis Hopper's role about being a disgruntled policeman, as well as the watch. I believe Jeff Daniels mentioned something about when you retire, I get a gold watch or whatever.
Yeah, there's so much foreshadowing
in that, and that also shows Keanu Reeves is great thinking action-wise, hey, let's hook up this giant cable to it, where Jeff Daniels is more of the smart bomb guy. So it sets up their dynamic of being partners and the risking someone's life to get the bad guy. So it sets up the character thought processes of Keanu being like, screw it, I'm going to jump on. He's like, all I know is being physicalities. Right. And so that's why, I mean, and it sets up the idea of the game of him specifically targeting Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I'm with Razzle on this one. Like, when you and I talked about this, you know, you were kind of on the fence about it, and you're saying that the movie could start right when that bus blows up. And I do agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that it would still be a good enough movie, but I like the exposition. I like everything they talk about. I like that it lays it all out. And you do get a little bit of that, like, he wakes up, he pets his dog, blah, blah, with the banter between Daniels and Keanu. So, I like it.
Yeah, I don't think that it's bad for the movie. I just, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, when I watch this movie... Less this one. The Rock really is the one that screams, like, this beginning section is just kind of...
Yeah.
But, I mean, I do love that this genre and this era, too, and we talked about this on... we might have talked about this on Air Force One. The music that they put on the credits in these movies at the beginning, it's like, you roll credits, and it's just like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-
Our pirates. There are more pirates.
Yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah.
The pirate song.
Yeah, it's pretty much been used for.
Or
all
what
of
about
them.
The or the, even the ending credits, like the cheesy '90s alt rock song about
yes, speed.
Yeah, like okay. It's literally like if you listen to this, it's like a theme song over the end credits.
Oh yeah, it's a feel good ending. Yeah.
It also has song ever. It has a lot of the cliches. One thing we like to talk about on the show is the hero and the villain qualifier.
Yeah.
It has the villain qualifier when Jeff Daniels looks at it and he's like, I don't recognize the work, but he's a pro.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Right?
Boom. It's like, that's all we need.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You're like, oh, he knows more than Jeff Daniels.
Yeah.
Oh, this is good.
This is good. I'm invested now. Yeah. I guess you don't really get a Keanu hero qualifier in this movie, do you?
The elevator scene is. I guess this guy plays by his own rules. Yeah. He risks people's lives.
Loose cannon.
He shoots his partner in the leg. Yeah. Like, you know.
He's the only one who can get us off this bus.
Exactly.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Okay, so let's kind of move into the box office. We've already talked quite a bit about... Oh, actually, one thing I do want to mention, one piece of trivia, is that Jean de Bont was actually attached to a Godzilla movie as the director that was supposed to come out in 1996. Ended up getting canned because... who was it? But Sony denied his budget requests, and that very same movie was end up being made in 1998 with Matthew Broderick. Yep. So he was originally the guy that was going to do that movie.
Okay.
But he wanted too much money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, box office and whatnot. This movie was made for $30 million.
Just obscenely low.
So. Yeah. Like you said, it's basically an indie nowadays.
Yeah.
And when you consider that it made, like 300 and...
350 million worldwide?
Yeah, 350 million worldwide. It actually... is Keanu Reeves' fifth highest grossing movie of his career, behind the three Matrix films and Something's Gotta Give.
Of course, Something's Gotta Give.
People loved Something's Gotta Give. I saw it in theaters twice.
Okay. I like that.
And the fact that this movie was such a massive blockbuster, I was reading a little thing about it. One of the Fox execs was in a screening, and he was sitting there watching the movie, and he started watching the audience, and he realized that whenever people would leave to go to the bathroom, they would walk backwards to the bathroom. And this is a note that he put, he's like, we've got something big here. These people got to pee. They got to do whatever they got to do in the bathroom. They won't even... They cannot divert their attention from the screen until they are out of the theater.
Right.
And that was the first moment of like, I think we've got something huge here. And again, it made over 10 times its budget.
Yeah. In today's market, if you know, to do that, you're spending $175 or $200 million on a movie that would sort of fill the same space.
Right. So you got to make not $2 billion.
Well, yeah. And that's... I mean, not even counting 100 in P&L.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny because they released it at June 10th as opposed to the standard like mid-July, beginning of August. That's, I think, some of the reason that it was as successful as it was. I mean, the movies that it was up against, you know, the Flintstones movie had been the incumbent champion for 2 weeks in a row. And you had The Crow and City Slickers 2 and Maverick.
Those are like the Schindler's List had been out for like 20 weeks or something already or something absurd.
Well, and I mean, you look at, City Slickers 2, a sequel to a very successful movie.
Yeah.
Then Maverick starring
Mel Gibson.
Arguably one of the biggest action stars in the late 80s, early 90s.
At the time,
at the time.
Absolutely.
On top of the fact that if you also think about it, it was June 7th, did you say?
June 10th.
So that's still early in the month of June.
Yeah.
And if you look at every movie now, over the last just 10 years, they've been turning the summer blockbuster into the spring blockbuster. So June 10th in 1994 is still relatively early in the summer, considering all the big action movies came out July,
right,
end of July, beginning of August, end of summer, before school goes into season. So June 10th was still relatively early for a major blockbuster.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'd be curious to go through and see all the major blockbusters that when they started, you know,
out. Massive blockbusters that came out in 94. It was interesting when we went to go look at the budget notes. We're like, there's only 10 movies in theaters? Like, this doesn't seem right. We had to go to like three different websites and double check, and all of them was like, yeah, there was literally like 10 to 12 movies in theaters at the time. And that is, again, a testament to why this movie did so well.
I mean, 6 weeks later, you know, that's when you have all the giant successes in 1994. I do think that's really interesting. It's also, you know, indicative probably of studios paying attention even as far back as 1994 and saying, okay, June 10th, you start talking about that shift. Yeah. They probably started to say, if everybody's going to be spending $100 million plus on their movie, and we need this to be a tentpole for our studio to not go under, why don't we stretch it out? Let's make summer start in April. Let's make summer start in May.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we'll have a better chance of opening if we're not up against Avengers 2 or something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, now summer starts April 3rd.
Right.
Like,
10
days into spring, and it's already summer blockbuster season.
So a couple numbers. Speed was the number 5 highest grossing film of 1994.
Yep.
It was the number 2 highest grossing R-rated film of 1994. behind True Lies,
which I love them. I can't wait till we do that movie.
Yeah,
and it's such
Doris,
a good one.
This is Boris.
My roommate in college had the biggest crush on Jamie Lee Curtis. He's like, I don't know what it is, man. I just love that slick back hair.
She was hot
back then.
And then it is ranked as the number 3 hostage movie all time behind Air Force One and Argo.
Air Force One. Why does that ring up?
What list is that on? Number 3 hostage movie?
Yeah.
Have those people seen Die Hard?
Hey man, numbers don't lie.
I guess.
It's a different category.
Yeah,
I'd be curious to see what kind of
list.
Kind of that is, because it's also kind of not a hostage movie.
Speed.
The whole bus is a hostage.
The dude's not there.
It doesn't matter, but he's still holding the entire bus hostage by a bomb.
Yeah. And
I got to see this list, but I believe you because I don't
absolutely right
read
about Die Hard. That is really weird.
I know. I was surprised at that too. I think it must fall in a different category. It's got to
either that or didn't make as much money.
Maybe it might be box office. Maybe could be that.
Yeah,
versus budget
numbers
could be like all numbers versus like box office versus budget.
Die Hard's 87, I think.
87, 88.
Yeah, and really like you look at the heart of this genre. 87 is pretty early. Like Predator's 86.
Mm-hmm.
Like those the Schwarzenegger movies that were really killing it. I mean T2 for instance is 1992. That's kind of right in the heart of it.
Yes.
You know, all the Nick Cage movies we do.
Early to mid-90s is like right when it's just action movie gold.
Well, and also, so that actually brings up a really interesting point, which is that this is another one of those movies, just like Air Force One, which is put people in a situation that they have to get out of in one location, right? They're on a bus the whole time. They're in a building. They're on an airplane.
They go from being in an elevator to being on a bus to being on a subway.
Right. They're pretty much trapped the whole movie.
Yes.
And it is really interesting that was a formula that Die Hard created. He complained that it was too similar to Die Hard, and it's not a formula you see so much anymore. It really isn't.
Yeah, it's a bummer too. Like even in the Die Hard movies, like Die Hard 5. I'm a huge Die Hard fan.
Yeah,
I just love the franchise. Huge Bruce Willis fan. Die Hard 5 was there was even a bit of dialogue in the movie where Bruce Willis is like, "We have nothing at stake here. Like we could just."
Yeah.
Go back to the United States, and all Die Hard 5 is it's a chase scene. It's a driving. It's point A to point B to point C to point D. All of a sudden, nukes are in the basement of some place in Russia,
right.
And it's like there's nothing at stake. Whereas you look at Die Hard, and it's single. It's like you're in one place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In Speed, you're in one place, but it's essentially the same. I mean, you're in multiple places, but you're not going across the globe like a Transformers or like even a Fast 7,
right.
As much as I love Fast 7. It's that formula of you're in a confined space with people watching you.
Yeah, and I mean, it is kind of critical nowadays in movies that like that's... Everybody's kind of... It's like a copycat genre.
Yeah.
You know, you look at like Taken was so successful. Well, if Taken's going to make all this money, then, you know, we should probably start looking at that. I mean, you know, car chases and things. I mean,
absolutely.
It's just a different time. It's just a different time ultimately. And I mean, you can... As we've said, the modern day action movie is the superhero movie.
Yeah.
That's what you get. And you're never going to get a superhero movie where everybody's trapped in a location. It's just less unique. That's all it is.
Yeah. And I think the fact that it's a different time kind of leads us right into our next topic, which is the critical reception of this movie.
Hilarious.
It's insane.
Yeah.
This movie got a 93 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
A 93. And it got a 70 something by users.
Yeah.
I wonder if this movie was made now, would those numbers be flip-flopped?
I got a quote for you. Janet Maslin of the New York Times loved it, stating, "The film's dialogue is much more literate than a bus schedule, but its plotting is smart and breathless enough to make up for that." She was like, this movie is intelligent action.
Yes.
When you watch this movie now, does this feel like intelligent action? It feels like awesomely mindless, but this doesn't strike me as the same kind of movie that is... It's not a classic in terms of its quality.
It's kind of crazy how they raise the stakes, because if I think about it, like, this movie... is not, like, as a hostage situation, I think Dark Knight Rises kind of takes it with just the boat scene. Like, just the...
Yeah, I mean, that's a hostage movie. That's awesome, too.
Yeah.
But I guess intelligent action, I guess, versus mind-blowing is, what's the difference between spectacle and smoke and mirrors? Like, explosions and, oh, we got these things going on, and we're going to drop cars out of planes. Whereas you got Keanu... You know how fast they're going,
sure.
And he's on a little cart being wheeled. Now, that's intelligent. I mean, that's as suspenseful as you can get smartly without just being like, here's 10 more million, add some more fire.
Right.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
My point is basically the reviewers at the time, both Peter Travers from Rolling Stone, Janet Maslin, they compare this movie...
Ebert.
They all say basically, this is as good or better than The Fugitive, which is like, I look back and I go, Fugitive in my mind is a classic dramatic thriller. It's a very quality movie.
Yeah,
great acting, great plotting. this movie's absurd. It's awesome.
Yeah, you have to suspend your disbelief a lot in this movie. Whereas in The Fugitive, there's very few moments where you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this, there's almost moments like that every 5-10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a statement of the quality. You know, I'll give you a good example. A friend of mine I was talking to recently, a guy that had worked with Tony Scott, we were talking about how those movies, those 90s movies, were so effective because he would take these great actors and put them in these ridiculous situations, and you'd be sitting there watching and you'd go, God, is what I'm watching really bad? Wait, is this bad? Is this good? Is this great? I don't even know. I just love it.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what these guys were so good at doing. It's like they're pushing your expectations so much to the edge that you kind of don't really know if what you're watching is a classic or just completely ridiculous. And I really do think that this movie is in that category where, to me, The Fugitive, it's harder to, like, so comparing the two, but at the time, people just saw them as the same thing.
Right, and it's crazy that people, again, they favored Speed over The Fugitive.
Well, and nowadays, if you remade, they're remaking The Fugitive as a TV show I just read.
Right.
And Speed. So if you took The Fugitive and Speed,
yeah.
and you both remade them now.
Right.
With every technology, like we have cell phones, we have all this.
Sure.
Fugitive would be way more disproven plot-wise. You'd have to suspend your disbelief way more that this dude who's a prominent doctor, he's got, you know, successful, etc., is going to get framed and completely get chased around the globe.
Sure.
Versus a bomb's going to explode if you go below 50 miles an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
It's way easier to consume and understand that, look, traffic sucks.
Yeah.
Drive on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Or we're going to die.
Totally.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's way more... You know, I mean, you look at Avengers, the new Avengers movie, and it's all that type of stuff versus, you know, a chase, you know.
Well, that's kind of what we talk about with circumstance, right?
Yeah, Speed will always triumph over Fugitive.
And that's, I mean, the movie is ultimately driven by circumstance, which is super clever. I mean, that's, you know, like, I wonder if there was, like, a pitch meeting to make this movie, you know, like, what would you say in the pitch meeting? Steven, didn't you say you found some lost audio footage of a pitch meeting for this movie?
Yeah, let me cue it up for you guys.
Oh, this is when Keanu pitched it to Fox, right?
Oh, is it Keanu in the pitch meeting?
I think so.
Okay.
I've never heard this. I'm curious about this.
Okay.
Me too.
Hi, Keanu. It's really nice to have you in the studio. We heard a lot about this movie, and we're really excited to see what you got. So, what is it?
Yeah, son, we're huge fans of yours. We loved Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. So, it's a movie about a bus that can't slow down.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you tell us more? Why can't the bus slow down?
Because if it slows down, then the movie ends.
Oh, interesting. So, is there something in the film preventing the bus from slowing down?
Yeah, the bus itself cannot slow down.
Oh, does it just not have brakes?
No, it has brakes, but it can't slow down.
Okay, one of the major successes our studio has right now is Schindler's List. How does this compare?
Favorably.
So the bus can't slow down. Does it travel through time? Is this a sequel to Bill and Ted's?
No. It can't slow down.
Oh.
Where would you say you could take this franchise?
You could put it on a boat.
So it's like Jaws meets Schindler's List.
Yeah.
So the boat could not slow down?
No, definitely not. Just like the bus.
This is brilliant.
It's fantastic. How much money do you think you need to make the film?
$30 million?
It sounds like Keanu was way ahead of his time because Speed 2 Cruise Control is in fact on a boat.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Incredible. He's just incredibly talented.
Just
and convincing.
He was full of conviction in that interview.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
God, I love that we keep finding these things.
It's amazing. Just hidden all over the internet. If you just Google search them, guys, you'll come up with them.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
That's all we're doing.
Google is the best invention ever.
Yeah, incredible.
Except from the iPhone.
So we do want to get into what we consider to be the ultimate action scene, which is very clearly in this movie, the scene where the bus has to jump over the missing piece of highway. One of the iconic movie scenes probably of the 90s in terms of action movies.
Right.
And something that I really thought of that was interesting is that I can remember growing up and I can remember like my teachers in school, my parents, my older brother. This was a movie that like The Simpsons references it. This was a movie that was talked about and spoofed to no end.
Yeah.
It's like that whole like I'm trying to think of a great example of the sort of thing, like when the Rolling or not the Rolling Stones, when Aerosmith got clean, and everybody's like, "Whoa, this rock band, they're clean now. They got off drugs and they're even more successful than ever." It's a story you've heard told 100 times,
right?
Right? It's like the basis of like, if you get clean, you'll be more successful. This movie, it's like, oh, that movie, that action movie, Speed. They all have to lean to one side of the bus so the bus doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, it's like this is just that movie.
Yeah,
and this
absolutely.
Is that scene. You know what I mean? This is they actually jump a highway in a bus.
Yeah, we've got the scene.
Yeah, yeah. So, Steve, if you want to cue it up.
I love this scene. It's just so absurd.
It's so exciting. Listen to the music.
Oh, yeah. The music tells you you're supposed to be excited. End. Road, end. Road, yeah. Work.
It's not...
Oh, like, God, he's good. Jack Travin. That guy?
Like, it's not even... Like, they could have just had him... They should have just fallen on... The underpass.
Yeah, right.
Like, well, there's no
ramp to propel
there's
them.
There's nothing. Dude.
But you watch it as it goes off, and it definitely hits a ramp. A non-existent
it's not
one.
Like
it was legitimately just nosedive.
Oh yeah, just stupid. Not even yeah. End.
Everybody, hold on.
Grabs Maggie. Got to.
Yeah, like what does that do? Wouldn't that have?
Yeah, and then look at it. It just goes straight up. How does it do that?
He, like, grabs her, and she turns the wheel, and the bus just...
yeah, it just still goes straight.
Like, I mean... That,
and then, boom. Of course it makes the jump.
I would have bought that more if he had everybody go to the back of the bus.
Right?
And put the weight on the back of the bus.
Yeah.
Just,
sure.
Just cuts.
I'm not a scientist, but that sounds like that would work.
Absolutely.
And the best thing is that they reshot this film to make it more believable.
Yeah. Because and so in the reshoot, right, the one
shot,
you actually see in the movie,
yeah.
The bus travels 109 feet in the air, right? It takes off from the ramp at 61 miles an hour. It's supposed to be 70, it only reached 61.
Mm-hmm.
But the front of the bus lifts up so high, I think it's like 20+ feet.
20 feet off the ground.
And it's out of frame. The cameras weren't in place for it.
Okay.
So that's why the bus is not entirely in frame, and it's just sort of, you're watching it, and it just seems...
So in real life, it jumped 100 feet?
Yeah, they actually did. They set the bus feet. Up a mile away from a ramp,
sure.
Hit 61 miles at the ramp, and it launched 109 feet, 20 feet off the ground.
That's 50 feet too much, because the gap on the road is only 50 feet.
Right, they just fly.
Yeah,
they should have just...
They like fully like messed with the bus. They augmented it. They put in like a giant suspension seat for the driver, which is 15 feet back from the front of the bus, so that when the bus landed, it would reduce spinal compression.
Yeah.
Because if you just were sitting in a regular and you did this,
right.
You'd probably just break your back.
Yeah.
Or quite possibly.
Huh. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, that's the one thing that I love about movies back then is, and we talked about this with Air Force One, is when the plane was in Ramstein, is that you have to do these things. They
right.
actually well, did this.
Speaking of what we're talking about right now, I was just reading yesterday, Fast 7, Furious 7, most of those stunts they did, like they dropped cars out of the plane.
Yeah, you have to.
They had a stunt dude run up the side of a bus that was falling off of a cliff.
Crazy.
Like they did, I mean, they didn't drive a car through 3 skyscrapers in Dubai.
Sure.
But they did most of the other stuff practical.
Well, that's the thing about CG is it has made us so aware of CG.
Right.
That when you watch movies now, and like you said, in Fast 7, if those scenes were completely computer generated, as an audience member, you'd be like, that's fake, this sucks. So they actually have to do it, and that's why I love 90s movies, is because they do it all the time, and it's believable.
Yeah. Another just note that I just remembered, there was a reference to Dukes of Hazzard early in the movie, like right in the first scene where the car like does the 90s thing where it like flies over.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, travels in the air and lands, and like it was just sort of like a nod at the fast car genre or whatever. But
that's one of the best parts of the beginning, is that like they have to get to the building, and then it just the car goes flying over the hill, crashing to the ground, and they get out and get dressed.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's great.
It's like, we're here. It's like, here's the situation. We have 13 hostages. Like, God, I love these movies. So this scene is definitely pretty iconic. I think, would you say it is the most iconic scene in the movie, right?
Yeah, which is crazy because this wasn't even in the original script.
Right.
The director was driving on the freeway because this movie was actually shot on the 105 and the 101 during Reconstruction, and he saw a part of freeway that was missing. And he was like, hey, that's a great idea. So the most iconic scene in the movie wasn't even in the script.
That's kind of like in Glengarry Glen Ross, where they wrote the Alec Baldwin speech for the screenplay. It's not in the play, and it's the most memorable scene of the entire movie.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I watch that scene literally once every 3 months.
Put that coffee down.
My friends and I quote that so much.
Yeah.
It's such a good scene.
Coffee is for closers only.
But the director loved that idea of it not being finished so much, he wanted to use it twice within 20 minutes.
Right.
And he also had the subway not finished.
Right.
Which is interesting, because we talk about this in movies, and it happens in Air Force One after Gary Oldman dies, and they got the MiGs chasing the plane.
Yeah.
And this movie, they've got the bus, everyone gets off the bus, and then they have to find a way for Keanu to catch Hopper. And so they add this extra, like, 25 minutes of film that kind of falls flat a little bit.
It's sort of like, what's the point
of this? Dragging out the movie.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, do you feel the same about it?
I don't 100% disagree. That's the problem. That's where it's like, it's almost like it's not a hostage movie to the extent that there's a whole extra, or even like, well, then again, you also have like Die Hard 3 where he gets the headache pills and he deduces where Jeremy Irons is hiding out at.
Right.
So it's like, so you save the day. How do you catch the bad guy?
Exactly. Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you need to have him somehow or another, and I guess you can't have him just chase him on foot with no repercussions. I mean, you need another hostage.
Exactly.
So it's like, you need to have Sandra Bullock exit the ambulance, even though she would be at a hospital. Yeah. She wouldn't even be with the police. She'd taken with all the other hostages to be debriefed.
It is interesting. Like, yeah, it's difficult to end these movies. I mean, last week we complained at length about the ending of Edge of Tomorrow. We felt like the ending of that movie was kind of tacked on. Mm-hmm. And you do have to sort of think the alternative is like, okay, what if in this movie they had basically ended it 20 minutes earlier? Maybe they give you just, you know, a quick, somehow they catch Dennis Hopper, I don't know. And then the movie ends. Would we all be sitting here thinking like, the ending's just really anticlimactic?
Well, this movie completely ran out of money before they even put in the whole subway scene at all.
Oh.
They ran out of money, and so they screened the movie to test audiences.
Oh, right. With the animated...
animated storyboard. For the last 25 minutes of the movie, it was just an animated storyboard, and the audience loved it so much that the studio was able to come up with the money to finish the movie and add that all in.
I seen a similar version of Edge of Tomorrow, like, 2 years before it came out, like, a year and a half before it came out, where a lot of the explosions and everything were, like, fake CG and like, cartoons. And the ending was a little different. They edited it a lot for the, you know, the major populace and put the love interest in there.
Right.
And Tom Cruise, actually, at the beginning, he was a bigger dick. And he was, like, more of, like, the ad guy and a chauvinist and hitting on women and all that. Mm-hmm. And they really shortened that up. But it's very interesting how movies over time, you know, how if they do well, they can get more budget.
As the scripts develop.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite script development stories is that the script for the original script, I think it is for Beverly Hills Cop, was rewritten so many times that it eventually became Cobra. Which is so ridiculous.
That's so ridiculous.
Can't wait to do Cobra on the show.
Stallone was supposed to be in Beverly Hills Cop, then it ended up
being Cobra.
Ended up getting on Cobra. But it's also interesting. I read not too long ago that it's almost the house exploding was an added in, like a second effect. Like Jeff Daniels wasn't originally supposed to die.
Yeah.
So that could have been the ending had that subway scene not been in, as they would have actually just found the dude at the house. Like, we figured you out. We solved
like
your
Daniels
you know,
would have found him.
Yeah, he would have, and they would have caught the dude.
But it's like a puzzle, because I like that Jeff Daniels dies in the explosion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, truthfully, we always, we break these things down. We talk about them in this way, but we love this movie. I mean, this movie's great.
It's so phenomenal. 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So let's get into the moments we love the most. This is something we're going to be introducing this week, guys, called the fist pump moment. So normally we do our favorite scene, but I think that's kind of generic. So what I want to do this week, we've all had the experience where you're home, it's late, you're watching some movie, maybe you've had a drink, something, I don't know, maybe you're really into it, and this moment happens in the movie where you just sort of like, you find yourself like nodding your head and squinting your eyes, are like, we call it the fist pump moment, where you just say to yourself, yes, I get to watch this movie for another hour. Like, hero in situation, yes. Like, it could be anything. It's very subjective. It's kind of loose. But if this happens to you sober watching a movie, you know you're really onto something.
Oh, totally.
So I want to go through, each of us chooses a fist pump moment for speed. I'm going to go first, because I love this. The fist pump moment for me in Speed is when the bus explodes at the beginning, and he's standing, and he's like, oh, God. And he hears the phone ring in the background. And it's kind of eerie. You're like, what is going on? He walks over, he picks the phone. He's like, pop quiz, hot shot.
Yeah.
There's a bomb on a bus. Once it goes above 50, you know, and you're just like, oh, this is great. And he's like, I'd want to know what bus.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, this is so good.
Right, right.
You know, I'm just totally in at that point. Yeah. I'm on board.
And the bus is 25-25, which later on I found out is because 25 plus 25 is 50.
Yeah.
Just a weird production note, but still interesting.
It's excellent.
Yeah. Rest?
My favorite, my fist pump moment would be I would say 2 minutes in, when the elevator gets stuck and you're like, okay, I'm assuming it's this guy, but yeah, the people in the elevator don't know why. And you know, somehow or another, they found out, like, the hotel or wherever they're staying may have called the elevator repair shop or whatever. And this police car comes hurtling over a mountain. There's no, at no speed could that car have gone that would have launched it over a bump like that in downtown Los Angeles.
Yeah.
No way. And it hurtled at least like 25 feet in the air. Landed properly, and they get out, and they're like, okay, there's this thing. So, just the fact that, like, there's way other routes they could have gotten there that probably would have been way faster than, than going through Silver Lake, I'm imagining, because that's the only place I know with that many hills.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, anytime a police car hurtles over the horizon, I'm on board.
Yeah, because it's like, this is what this movie's going to be like. So here you go.
Huge fan of horizons and hills and police cars hurtling through the air.
I'm going to hop on that train as well. My fist pump moment is when they're like, we have to exit. And it's like, they're going to exit. They're going to exit. So they're going to take a bus into downtown Los Angeles at 50 miles an hour. And this ensues, the tilting of the bus and everyone on one side and the bus jump. It's just like right then when I'm like, oh, they have to exit. I'm like, yes, here we go. Here comes the craziness. Here comes the madness.
What I love so much about the idea of a fist pump is it's like it's that moment where you're watching and you're just like, I love this movie. Yep. I love it. I'm so on board.
Actually, can I change mine?
Yeah.
I want to change mine to the fact that there's like hardly zero traffic in Los Angeles. Yeah. And I want to live in this magical land of Los Angeles that there's no traffic at 8 in the morning in Santa Monica or even on the 10. Like they hopped on the 10 at 8 o'clock when he was trying to find the bus. And there's like zero traffic heading east or west. And I'm like, I want to live in this world.
Carmageddon, 1994.
Yeah. One of the guys in the chat, would you like to know, his fist bump moment is for me. Dennis Hopper's head hits one of the subway markers and gets decapitated. Keanu says, yeah, but I'm taller.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. That's a good one. That is a great one. Thank you for that.
A line doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense, but...
I'm taller. Like, what?
Because your head, because the head's gone now?
Leverage me because his arms are longer.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay, so now I want to go over favorite line.
Yes.
And this time I will start with you guys.
I have a couple. The first one isn't really a line, and it's in the trailer. It's right after Keanu shoots Jeff Daniels in the leg, and then Dennis Hopper kind of like waddles away. He's like, ha ha ha! Is this like a maniacal, like hilarious waddle laugh combination? But since that's not a line, it's the end of the trailer and the end of the movie. Pop quiz, hot shot. You've got a hairpin trigger aimed at your head. What do you do? What do you do?
Yeah, it's great. Classic.
My runner-up, that would have to be my main one, Pop Quiz, because that's one of the most quotable of all action movies.
Yeah.
Aside from, you know, Welcome to the Party, Pal, or Yippee-Ki-Yay, you know.
Sure.
I would say Pop Quiz Hot Shot, or What Do You Do, is one of the most, everybody, any guy or any girl who loves action movies or just grew up in that era, quotes it for some reason. Even if you don't know where it came from, What Do You Do, or Pop Quiz, when you're, like, being sarcastic or sardonic or talking down to people, it's... from that movie, and everybody uses
standard,
it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So my runner-up would have to be, there's enough C4 on this bus to blow a hole in the world.
Yeah.
Come on, guy. No, there's not. That's the world's pretty big. That bus is very small.
You have a hair trigger aimed at your head. What do you do? What do you do?
Yeah.
Oh, the music.
That's like, I totally agree with you. And that actually reminds me of the other line that Jeff Daniels says when he's in the office. And this is not my line, but when he's just like, he's an encyclopedia of bombs.
Yeah.
You know, it's just more qualifiers. It's so good. So my favorite line is actually one of the early moments when you're just like, slam, bang, action, thriller, where they're driving and you know, Maggie sees, is it Maggie or Annie?
Annie.
And she sees that there's a woman pushing a stroller across the street. And you're like, no! And it hits it, and it's just goes flying. There's cans everywhere. And Keanu turns around. And to me, this is one of the classic, like, what makes him Keanu. He turns around. He's like, cans! It was full of cans!
Yeah.
It's just like...
He's, like, excited but trying to calm someone down at the same time.
I just don't even know. It's just amazing. It just makes it made me laugh out loud to the point that last time I was watching this movie with a glass of wine in my hand, I paused it to call my buddy in Seattle who used to be, like, my favorite movie with. And just be like, do you remember that moment in Speed when they hit the cans? Like, I just was so excited.
So excellent.
And it was, like, an old-timey stroller. It wasn't even, like, a 1994 stroller. It was, like, a stroller from, like, 1943.
Yeah. Hilarious.
We got Wild Man Beyond in the chat says, fist foot moment for me is when Jack steals the car and the guy's still in the car.
Glenn Plummer, the actor, sorry, I'm gonna hijack this.
Go ahead.
He lost his license 2 days before filming this movie. So they had to work around that in the film. But I love that. In the 90s, if you're a cop and you don't jack someone's car,
yeah,
then you're not doing your job right.
Well, yeah, and the other thing that I love is this is another like trope we see in these movies where it's just like desperate character destroys luxury vehicle. He's like, I don't care that your car's nice, I'm gonna rip the door off. It's the same thing as in The Rock, you know? And the guy's like, you just effed up your Ferrari.
Right, or he's like, if you scratch my Hummer, I'll have your ass.
Yeah, exactly. It's so classic.
So good.
Bog up nice stuff. All right. So we're gonna move into where the hero and villain rank all time. This is sort of a weird one because they're not iconic characters for me anyway. I'll let you guys jump in first with this. This is an exercise where we just sort of talk about if you're thinking about the top 20, the top 50, the top 100 heroes and villains, do the characters in this movie chart?
No way. Not at all.
Not for you at all?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
So what, you're saying like top 100, top 200, top 250 or not even?
I mean, top. If we're going top 100 and I had to sit down and I had like 8 hours to compile a list, maybe top 100.
Yeah. Right.
But there's so many. I mean, Bruce Willis alone would be on the top.
Yeah, of course.
Top McClane, 20. Yeah. And then you got every Tom Cruise.
It's so weird if you compare like McClane to Jack Tremblay, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely, I mean, and then he's a mad bomber. It's not like he's, you know what I mean? Like other villains and other hero and other action movies are just way more iconic than Dennis Hopper, you know, on a walkie-talkie.
I don't know if I really agree with you. I'm gonna let you jump in on this.
It's interesting because I'm kind of on the fence about it. I'd maybe put Hopper in the top 50. Like, he doesn't have that same impact, because I know that Silence of the Lambs is not an action movie, but Anthony Hopkins won an Academy Award for that movie, and he's on screen for, like, 15 minutes.
Right.
You know, Hopper's in this same situation, where he's hardly ever on screen, there's hardly interaction between him and the hero, other than on the phone or on the walkie-talkie. It doesn't carry that same weight that Anthony Hopkins does. He's not as great. It's not as well-acted, I don't think.
Yeah.
I'd maybe put him in the top 50, probably closer to top 75.
Sure.
And then for Keanu, I don't know, top 100. I love the movie,
yeah,
and I love him in the movie, but I don't want this hero saving my ass at the end of the day. No. I'd much rather have like 99 other heroes doing
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Like I think, Batman or somebody.
I think I go... Hopper is memorable in a way that a lot of the villains from these movies aren't. Even the campy ones. Like the villain from Commando who wears the mesh shirt and is like loosely like pale and fat.
Right.
Who's like a funny villain.
Yeah.
But he's not memorable in the same way that Hopper's True. Memorable. So I would give Hopper top 40.
Top 40.
And then for Keanu, actually, see, the thing that's so beautiful about Keanu in this movie, this and Point Break, that's like really the pair. Because later in his career, when he's a little older, it doesn't resonate in the same way. It's so great, it's just different.
Yeah.
But young Keanu, where he's like pretty jacked,
yeah.
he's a singular action star. Because as we said, it's kind of like he's accidentally the smartest guy in the room because he's this well-to-do, hotshot who's kind of got a heart of gold.
Right.
And
he's kind of stupid.
Yeah, he's very memorable for me. I'm going to put Jack Tremblay in my top 25.
Top 25.
He might hit like maybe like top 30. Maybe he's like number 27, but he's not outside the top 30.
Really?
There's not that many action stars that I can think of where I'm just 100% just...
Are we talking action stars or the character?
The character.
The character.
Yeah. There's not that many characters I can think of where I go, I like this guy more. Like, there's just not. I mean, there's a bunch of Tom Cruise characters, but there's a bunch of Willis and Cage.
There's at least 8 Tom Cruise characters. There's at least 4 Bruce Willis characters. That's 12. That gives you 18 more to go.
All right, I'm gonna readjust.
You got Harrison Ford.
Back up a little bit.
You got Harrison Ford. You got.
I'm gonna back up.
Okay. You got every superhero.
I'll put Trav in top 50.
Okay.
And I'll put Hopper in the top 40.
Okay.
I'll give you that. I'll give you those. I'll give you Dennis Hopper. Where do the dinosaurs from Jurassic Park range though? Because they're way more memorable than Dennis Hopper. When I'm thinking villains, I'm thinking of the T-Rex.
Not an action movie. We can't do it on the show. No, we've thought about it before. It violates too many of the rules.
We're gonna cut him off there.
As far as we
might be able to do it in the movie.
As far as the list, though, like character, you know what I mean? Like, as far as villain, if we're going hero and villain list, the dinosaurs are more memorable than Dennis Hopper.
I mean, that's the same thing as the monkeys in Congo, the aliens in Alien.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
It's
a hard thing to...
Exactly.
Okay.
Lists like that are always hard to factor in.
So we just have a couple more little bits to hit before we wrap it up. Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorites. And this week, guys, I know last week we mentioned this, that this is recast. We're going to recast the film with modern-day actors if they were to remake it. We want you to do it with us. So a couple of you actually were cool enough to comment on the YouTube video, tweet at us and let us know. You can tweet at us personally or you can comment on the YouTube video about your recasting choices. There's 4 characters to recast. We're going to be recasting Keanu, Sandra Bullock, Dennis Hopper and Jeff Daniels. And this is with modern day actors who kind of closely resemble the same point in their career. So I will let one of you fellas start.
All right. I guess I'll hop on this train. I think that Sam Worthington would be an excellent replacement for Keanu in this.
That's interesting. It's pretty good.
He was really hot a few years ago, but he could totally play that like accidental genius.
Yeah, yeah.
He's jacked, you know, he's good looking enough. Like, sure. I think he would do great in this role.
That's pretty clever. I hadn't thought of that. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to say Tom Cruise.
Even now?
Oh, yeah.
Cruise.
He doesn't age, dude.
52-year-old Tom Cruise.
Absolutely. He's a cop ready, you know. You know what I mean? Like, he's been there a while. He's a loose cannon.
Yeah.
You know? He's got enemies.
Sure.
That he's foiled so many people time and time again.
And he's so aggressive.
He's gotten
sincere.
Medals. He's so, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, absolutely.
Okay. What about for you, Bateman? There's a camera on this bus.
Yeah.
You're okay. Yeah. Okay. I go Chris Evans.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, I can see that.
Chris Evans, sure. I think, would destroy it. He's, I think, like, he's almost a little too famous now. It would have been perfect if it was like Chris Evans, like pre Captain America.
Right.
But I still think he could do it now. I actually don't think Chris Evans is that big of a star, despite him being Captain America. I mean, he's
pretty,
very famous.
Pretty massive,
he's very famous, but I wouldn't feel like he wouldn't be like offensively star studded
in
the way that Keanu wasn't yet.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of the everyman a little bit, somewhat still.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's go Hopper. What do you guys got?
Hopper, Tommy Lee Jones.
That's great.
I love Tommy Lee Jones. You can throw a little bit of Two-Face in there, you know?
Great point in his career, too. Just cheesy enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones is good. I would say Sammy Jackson would be a good one.
Ah,
Sammy,
okay.
Sammy J.
Okay.
He's always a good villain.
And he's campy a little.
He's always a good villain. Like, he's just, you know, he could be, you know, crazy enough.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say him. Jack Nicholson would be good. I like him in every movie.
I love Jack.
But he's super old. He'd be like, he would not be able to run, or he'd be you know.
I think what's really interesting about when you're recasting Hopper at this point is because, as we said, he's kind of at the tail end. He's still convincing, but he's corny.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he was a great actor at one time, but he kind of gets away with being a little, like, silly, which is why I choose Robert De Niro.
De Niro could be good.
I think De Niro at this point in his career is just right for it.
He was one of the original people to play it.
But yeah. I think he was too believable.
I think that's what happened.
Like, I'm trying to think of, like, because he was probably 50-ish.
He was 94 is like right around the time that he's making like Night in the City, Mad Dog Murray, Heat, Ronin the next year, like
right.
So I'm trying to think of like 55, maybe 60-year-old-ish, older actor guys that have, you know, that have been around the block, and I'm
there's a bunch.
I'm thinking of 55-year-old actors. I'm going straight to like Clooney and all that, who are like 50 years old.
And they're too credible.
They're too credible.
So like, I'm saying De Niro at this point is like no longer credible dramatically. Like I don't doubt he could still pull off a good script. I just think that the kind of work he's been taking, he would be perfect for this role now.
I mean, you could do the dude Snape. What's his name again? Alan Rickman would be good. He could be good.
Yeah, Rickman.
He could be a
good
bad guy. He's always a good bad guy. Though.
Sandra Bullock. Who do you guys got? Not yet famous Sandra Bullock, really.
Okay, Sandra Bullock. I'm going to go with Elizabeth Olsen just because I'm in love with her right now.
She's kind of blowing up right now.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Jessica Chastain.
Ah, no, she's too intense.
Nah.
She's beautiful, smart, intense.
Nah, she can be dumbed down a little bit.
I love Jessica Chastain.
Oh, me too. I think she's phenomenal.
I would do very nice things for her.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I would open the door for her. She's fantastic.
I would let her borrow my hoodie even though I said you should bring your own.
Right. She's great.
I think that she's so great that she can play this role.
Excellent. I really love mine. I thought I did. I'm forgetting it now. I had such a good one.
It's just Jessica Chastain was.
I got
so
another
good.
One. If you can't remember.
I should have written it down. It was so good. Go ahead.
I'd say Deborah Ann Woll.
Okay, she'd be good.
Oh yeah.
Emily Blunt could be good.
I said that too. I really like.
Yeah, she's a good action star.
She's great. Yeah. She's kind of intense. Damn it! I can't remember mine. All right, we're gonna move on to to Jeff Daniels, and hopefully I'll remember mine before we're done.
Joel Edgerton.
Oh, Edgerton, sure. Don't you think Edgerton and Worthington in the same movie would be like a little, kind of too similar
super
looking?
Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
They're like kind of the same person a little bit.
I just love Joel Edgerton so much, and I think he could totally play that role.
Anything that we can do to talk about the movie Warrior, we will just do.
Yeah, basically.
What do you got?
Jeff Daniels' character. I will go with, I'll say like Adam Brody or someone like that, like a skinnier, like nerdier, like he's the bomber guy.
Yeah.
Like he's the, you know, he'd be the nerd that he's not the action hero like Keanu is.
Right.
He's the one who's in the office studying bomb schematics.
Yeah, kind of like the new Q in the James Bond
movies. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Interesting. I in my mind, when I looked at Daniel's character, I was like, you have to be old enough that you're sort of like, I'm only on this mission because I'm a vet, but yeah. I'm not physically as fit as like you are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one injury and I'm gonna be in the office. Adam Brody's too young for me.
Yeah, that's true.
But, so I went Dennis Leary. Though he's
he could be good.
He's like a little old, but he's good and sarcastic.
Yeah, he could talk trash back and forth.
He feels like he'd be like a really good foil.
He'd be a good one.
Yeah, I wish I could remember my
Dennis Leary would be a good one.
Sandra Bullock, I'm totally disappointed.
I wish you could too, man. Yeah. Will Ferrell or Gary Busey?
I do love Busey.
Busey's good.
I'm a huge Busey fan.
Nick Nolte would be good.
Nick Nolte.
Yeah. Nick Nolte's great.
You're a bomb on a bus.
I had one option in my mind was Sienna Miller, because I think she hasn't established herself as like huge enough that I thought she could do a really great job with it.
Jones could be good.
She could be good.
Yeah.
Like, it's a homely girl. Like, they're not supermodel, but it's like a girl who could legitimately...
January Jones is pretty hot. She's
but if you put her in... I mean, she is, but so is Sandra Bullock.
Yep.
But no, I don't think Sandra Bullock was that hot yet.
Oh.
In my opinion.
I think that's the whole point with Jessica Chastain, is that you can always be brought down in your hotness level with Hollywood makeup and clothing, costume.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, that's fair. Okay, let's move on to the last category. We are going to skip Cage versus Cruise this week because...
The answer is obviously Cruise.
Yeah. The three categories discussion, which is which of the three action movie categories does this fit into, which the three categories are totally ridiculous, which is falling off a cliff of absurdity, totally legitimate, which is like the best of the best, could almost be an award-worthy movie, and ridiculously legitimate, which is the perfect hybrid, the zenith, if you will.
Right.
Where does this movie fall for you guys?
For me, this is the perfect hybrid. It's ridiculously legitimate. It's got the legitimacy of... the plot and the actual stress level,
right.
Much like Die Hard, is one of the best action movies, I would say. And it's cut and dry. Like, it tells you the rules. This is everything you're about to see. This is what's going to come forward. Like, even Dennis Hopper's like, look, dude, this is what's going to happen. Anybody tries to get off the bus, I'm blown up.
Right.
He does. He states the rules, and you know the circumstances that they're in. They're in a big city with traffic. They're on a highway. They're running out of gas. But... they jump 50 feet of highway.
Right. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
So it's still suspending disbelief, like, jokey-wise. Like, it's still far-fetched. But had they not jumped that, it would have been, I mean...
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, as legitimate of an action movie as they get.
Sure, yeah, totally. That's fair.
Yeah, I do love that Hopper just follows through with everything he says he's going to do. I miss that in movies sometimes with the villain.
Absolutely. Right.
I agree. I find it in the perfect zenith, and the reason is the exact same. Sans bus jump, this is a totally legitimate movie. I'll even take the turn where everyone's on one side of the bus and the bus is on two wheels. Whatever, I'll give you that.
It's believable enough.
It's believable enough.
I'm not a physics major, but it looked right to me.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. At least they all tried. Like you said, they were all on one side of the bus. Yeah. Maybe at least in the bus jump, they could have been in the back. But yeah, the bus jump just takes you to that point where I'm like, nah, done.
Yeah. I just remembered. Mila Kunis.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I think she'd nail it.
You think that she's Jessica Chastain is too hot and Mila Kunis isn't?
Yeah.
I just think that she's too intense. That's the thing.
Okay.
I think she's too serious.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I respect her as an actress too much.
Fair enough.
I love Mila Kunis to death.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go with the same thing as you guys. I'm going to go even a step further and say, I think this is one of the premier... I'm going to go on record. This is top three of the middle category. In my opinion, if you were making that list... which I have a loose idea, which we won't get into right now.
Yeah.
This is a top three movie in the ridiculously legitimate category.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think it's...
I mean, it's as far as... I mean, it's cut and dry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so believable in the sense of everything is real world, like, grounded.
Yeah. It's almost in the legit category to, like, totally
so close.
Legitimate. Yeah. You could make a strong argument that it is. It's just the tonality to me of... the tonality of Keanu... is what drops it into the middle category, because he's that total, just like the absurd character where you're just kind of, you're laughable almost.
Absolutely.
The movie is too laughable while watching it in an awesome way to, I think, give it the ultimate legitimacy. So I think it is a premier movie in that middle category.
Absolutely.
I'll concur.
Excellent. Fantastic show.
I like it.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. This has been really, really fun. Seriously, thank you very much for having
us. Yeah, this is super, super fun. So, guys, if you want to check in with us on future episodes, you can follow any one of us on Twitter. My Twitter, Instagram, and occasionally Periscope is Ben Bateman Media.
Mine is at Andrew Guy on Twitter, G-H-A-I.
My name is on Twitter, at my name is Razzle2. The number two, and I got a couple other podcasts if I can promote those.
Yeah, I
host a couple podcasts. I host a podcast called Today We Learned on the Nerdist Network. Then I host another podcast with my buddies Zachary Levi and Tyler Labine, who have been in action movies and stuff like that. So you might like that too. And it's called Picking Favorites. And that one is it's on the Wolf Pop Network. And pretty much we sit down with a guest and we pick three categories and we talk about our favorite. So it could be favorite Stallone movie, our favorite food, and our favorite, you know, Tom Cruise movie or whatever. It changes every week and it's really, really fun. So please check those out.
If you ever want to come on here and talk about your favorite Tom Cruise movie, you're always welcome.
Oh, dude, I could talk about Tom Cruise forever.
We'll have you back for a Cruise episode. It's my favorite. Thank you so much for checking in, guys. Remember, YouTube, Twitter, et cetera, interact, rate us, and we will see you next week.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.